The moment I wake up before I put on my
I'll
makeup.
say a little prayer for you.
Welcome to Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast for your dose of dish.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to another episode of Gay Talk 2.0, an LGBT podcast streaming live on Digital Stream Radio, where you can access that live stream every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you can do so by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. Today, we're going to welcome power couple and illustrators extraordinaire Ashley Molesso and Chessie Needham, founders of the popular Brooklyn stationery company Ash and Chess. They join us to talk about their latest publication, The Gay Agenda, an amazing book full of historical facts and amazing illustrations and so much more. We're going to have them both on the second half of the show. My name is Tom and I am your host, and I'm joined today by the one co-host that was able to log in today and be here with us. So, ladies and gents.
Hey, y'all. Nick or Trish.
And thank you all for joining us on today's show. So, we have... several stories to cover, but as we always do, we like to talk about to our friends and sort of kind of bounce back and forth and find out how we're doing. We are living amidst COVID-19. We're all locked up in our houses. We can't do the show from the studio, and so we're doing it virtually. So, my dearest Nick, I miss you. How are you?
I'm all right. It's like one day is just blending into the next at this point. Honestly, I don't know what day it is.
I woke up this morning.
I woke up and I was like, yeah, I was like, I'm not going to work. And I was like, oh, wait, I have a notification 15 minutes until a meeting. I was like, I guess I'm going to work.
Yes. So, and then so you throw on your face and we say a little prayer and say, I hope
actually,
this
works. I didn't even throw on my face this morning or do my hair. My boss was like, are you okay? I was like, no, I'm not okay.
Wow.
I didn't sleep. I've been having a hard time sleeping, so it's been a little weird.
You know, it's not uncommon. I'm seeing a lot of people post on social media that they're having trouble sleeping, that, you know, the anxiety and the uncertainty of all of this, you know, surrounding COVID-19 and these, you know, self-imposed quarantines. Well, I don't know if they're self-imposed at this point, but, you know, just self-quarantining and being in a space for so long without having an outlet is really getting to people.
Yeah, it's a little crazy. I mean, my outlet this weekend, well, actually, it was Friday. I went to the store and I spent like a shit ton of money.
It's like everything went up.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. But like we needed food and stuff. And mm-hmm. I think we're pretty much stocked up for like 2 weeks now. So that's good. But I think I've said this every week, but I've had the same tank of gas for over a month now.
Yeah, me too.
And it's, like, I'm going crazy.
I think we both are. I mean, for me, you know, it's this week flew by. I watched 22 MCU movies back to back. 22, all of the Marvel movies I watched. And throughout all of that, you know, how they connect and how one leads into the other and how one hints at what's coming next. What I couldn't understand is during Endgame, how Hawkeye was actually able to hold the Soul Stone, right? Because supposedly these stones are so powerful that no ordinary human or person or entity can hold it. It needs to be encased in something. Yet when Nat, or in this case, I believe she's called Black Widow, sacrificed herself.
No, Black Widow is Nat.
Yes. When she sacrificed herself, she needed to die for the Soul Stone to reveal itself and for Hawkeye to take it. He held it in his hand. And I was just like, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense. Because all of the other ones, you know, the Tesseract and this stone and that stone, ordinary people, not even gods like Thor, could hold these stones because they were that powerful. So that threw me off a little bit. Maybe it was her sacrifice.
Yeah, that's what I would say.
That
because it was, that is a little like...
poetic.
Weird. No, it's like a weird plot point that is kind of missed, but at the same time, like, I kind of always just equated it to the fact that she gave her life so he could have this.
Yeah. And my thing is, it's like, it was them two that were sent to specifically go get that stone. Can you imagine if it were the Hulk, for example, and Gamora, which died originally getting the first stone when Thanos went and got it. Anyway, that's how I spent my last week after work, just literally watching movies and doing nothing. And not nothing, but, you know, just sort of kind of doing things that I haven't had an opportunity to do in a very long time, which is absolutely nothing.
Mm-hmm. No, I feel you.
So it's been a crazy crazy week, and there's a lot of announcements. A lot of things are being canceled, so we might as well just jump right in and start talking about what's going on. The mayor of New York just announced officially. They had talked about it a couple of weeks ago, whether or not they were going to, but it is officially announced that all non-essential permitted events in New York City for the month of June will be canceled. This includes the Pride Parade, which is scheduled for the last Sunday of every June, every year. It is the first time in our LGBTQ history since the Stonewall riots that we won't have a marching parade going down Fifth Avenue and through the village in New York City. So literally 50 years we've been having this parade, 50 plus years. It would have been the 51st year this year. And this is the first time in our history that we won't be able to do that.
And, yeah, it's crazy. But yeah. What I think is important to note, like, it's super sad that that's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I think that we're seeing a lot of people protesting and being out and doing just stupid stuff. I mean, like, I hope that the LGBTQ plus community is smart enough to not protest this or not create a pride or try to get a group of people together and do some type of march, because it's just not smart. This was in no way an attack against the LGBT plus community.
I don't think it was at all.
It was more actually to not specifically for the health of everybody, but it's also benefiting the LGBTQ plus community because we're not putting ourselves at risk.
Absolutely.
And that, I think, is something that we all need to respect and honor, because I see a lot of protests right now, like, and then you see all this stuff and you see all these people having these group parties and you're like, what the fuck are you thinking? Mm-hmm. What are you thinking? Like, you're gonna get infected. You're gonna infect somebody. Something bad is gonna come of it. So, like, just don't do it.
And like you said, you know, this isn't a specific attack on the LGBT community in itself. It's worth noting that this cancels all non-essential permitted events in New York City, which includes the Puerto Rican parade that happens in June. It also includes, I believe there's a Jewish parade that takes place as well in the month of June. So all non-essential.
Celebrate Israel, but.
I believe so, yes. I'm not really familiar with it, but I was somewhat reading or skimming through some of the events that were canceled. And there's a lot. There's a lot of things that are going on in New York City. And believe it or not, you know, being one of the biggest cities in the world, you don't want to put yourself at risk and expose yourself, like you said, being out there and ending up contracting this virus and potentially, you know, harming yourself and those that you love. So
And, you know, we used to say that the epicenter was Seattle and the West Coast. It is now New York City.
That's right.
And we have to respect that. We have to be... And we're in Connecticut. We're not far from it. And we're right down the road from everything that's going on in New York. And people are leaving New York and coming here and going home. And I get it. And I understand that. But at the same time, we have to respect the fact that the epicenter right now is New York City. And if we didn't have Kumo, thank God, I'm a Kumosexual. Did anybody see that? Did you see that today?
Homosexual?
Yeah. Did you see that?
No, I did not.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Noah Trevor. Do you know Noah Trevor?
I love him. I do love him. He's amazing. So that
he calls himself a homosexual.
He does. Why?
So he calls himself a homosexual because he's in love with the way he has led the state of New York.
He's not only leading the state of New York. I mean, he is the person that people are tuning into to get information on the coronavirus, because some of the stuff that he's saying, some of the stuff that he's implementing in the state of New York are things that are being picked up by other states.
And he's also taking the time to say, you're not all going to like this. Some people are going to hate some of the decisions I make. Some people are going to be really pissed and hate me for the decisions I make. But I'm doing this right now for the health of the American people, for the health of everybody in New York State. So I understand that. We can relook at the reason why, you know, these things happened, whatever I did here and that, whatever. But the reality is, it's like he's so transparent with the fact that the decisions he's making may not be the best ones. Mm-hmm. They also may not be the right ones. But for him and the people that he's working with, they are the right ones at the time for the health of the American people and or the New York state.
I'll tell you one thing. I mean, he at least has the audacity and the balls to make the decisions, right? We have currently a president right now, hashtag not mine, but we do in DC right now that doesn't want to commit to helping states to obtain PPE and all other essential medical, things that people need to be able to do their jobs and be able to safely help the American people heal. And we have someone that's not willing to put their neck out there for our nation, but we have a governor that's doing it not only for their state, but, you know, is really providing critical information amidst one of our biggest crises in our lifetime to his state, his constituents, and other people around the U.S.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, like, I don't need to combat that at all. He's a dumbass.
Yeah.
Like,
and we're talking about Trump.
I literally hate the man. Uh-huh. There are some positive things. And, like, if one more fucking person says, for all those people that didn't support Trump but now want to take the money, if they say that one more fucking time, I'm going to be like, shut the fuck up. One, it wasn't his idea. Mm-hmm. Did he back it? Yeah, and that's amazing.
It had overwhelming support from Congress, and so, you know, they passed it with overwhelming support, and had he, let's say, vetoed it, it would have went back to Congress, and they would have passed it with an even bigger majority, and then it would have passed anyway. So at this point, his hands were tied. He had to sign the legislation. And there's another one cooking. There's another one coming right behind it that may also pass, which will provide even more funding for small businesses that are looking for loans, which, by the way, the last bill that they passed, those funds were exhausted fairly quickly by big corporations not allowing small loans or small businesses to actually take advantage of that program. So they're looking to pass and yet another bill to provide more funding for the small businesses that need this help.
And you know what pisses me off the most, even with, like, you know, your Trump supporters and whatnot, and they still think he's doing a good job and this and that. What pisses me off the most is, in a time of crisis, and we've talked about this, you, as a leader, you find a way to step up. Mm-hmm. You find a way to do the right thing. I'm going to say it wrong again. Is it Cuomo?
Cuomo.
Cuomo. Why do I always want to say Cuomo? Cuomo. May have not been the like best person for the job. Mm-hmm. A lot of people had issues with him. He doesn't have the best, you know, everybody has skeletons in their closet, but in a time of crisis, he stood up and he's making the American people feel good, or not good, but better and comfortable knowing that every day he's going to come on and say, like, this is what's going on. This is how we're handling it. And this is how I'm going to make sure that we get through this together. And that is what a leader does. Our leader is not doing that for this country
at all.
I don't know. Did I read on air if Donald Trump had captained the Titanic last week, or was that on a Zoom call? I can't remember.
It wasn't on air last week. So go right ahead.
All right. So I think this kind of sums it up really well. So I'm equating this to COVID-19. So if Donald Trump had captained the Titanic, one, there is no iceberg. Two, we won't hit an iceberg. Three, I knew it was an iceberg before anyone else knew. Mm-hmm. Four, no one knows icebergs better than I do. Mm-hmm. Five, the penguins brought the iceberg here. Six, no one could have predicted the iceberg. Seven, we cannot allow an iceberg to stop our ship. Eight, the crew is spreading fake news about icebergs. Nine, or seven, eight, whatever number I'm on. Some of you have to drown. And last but not least, I'm the best captain. Ask anyone.
And he died in the boat. At least that captain went down with the boat. I don't think this one will.
But I think the point is, the captain went down with the ship in the Titanic, right? Mm-hmm. Went down with the ship. Trump
wouldn't.
The reality is that metaphor is perfect for Trump in general.
Yeah.
Oh, it's not a thing. It's not going to happen. Oh, it's happening. I knew it was happening. I'm the president. I just couldn't tell you. You know, like he literally is setting himself up to just continually be maimed because, like, he's doing it. He's so ignorant.
I agree. And the thing is, he's doing it to himself. And so the Biden campaign released an ad recently. And let me tell you, it is using his words, his own words, against him in a way that it was just genius. And I wish I could find the ad because I would play it. Or, you know, maybe we'll post it on the Gay Talk page on Facebook. But it was pretty, it wasn't classless. It wasn't tacky. It was just basically pointing out a lot of the things that he said that he's done since the beginning of this, you know, just highlighting a timeline that really just spells out everything the way it just basically came out and the way we see it. Right. We're literally watching it in real time. And the man starts off with one thing one week. And then the week later, he's completely jumped ship and he's saying something completely different. You know, so it's incredible to see how all of this plays out. But I guess we'll see. So, my dearest Trish, you have a story in here, which I was dying for you to talk about because I think it's so amazing.
I know. I kind of wanted to end the show with it because it's like a uplifting note. But since it's just you and me, I guess we'll talk about it.
Yeah, we also have the Gay Agenda. This book is so much fun. People, I cannot wait. This book comes out on April 28th. Y'all got to get this. This is one of the best illustrated books I have ever seen on LGBTQ history. Super fun. But anyway, Nick, go.
So I know this is going to make Mama Kim super happy.
I know.
And it was a pretty impressive story to me. Mm-hmm. But as we all know, we're all in quarantine. We're, you know, spending time with family in ways that we've never had to spend time with family before. Getting to know each other again, getting to know things about each other we didn't want to know. But anyway, so this dad posted a question. And the question was, my son and his friend are a couple. How do I let them know it's okay? So this man, I'm not going to go into extreme detail, but he goes on about his sordid past. He had separated from his wife or partner. He did have a drug problem, which he is now sober. And he has been supportive of his son ever since. And so it's been, I believe, 12 years that he's been sober now. His son just went to college and is now living with his friend off campus and has been living with his friend off campus for a while. Now, the son did come home during the COVID crisis, and his partner or friend lives in Canada. So instead of going back to Canada, the friend is now staying with him.
Yeah.
I know, right? So, but anyway, the kid has not come out to his dad, but the dad is in this story. We'll post it if you read it. He is overwhelmingly proud of his son. He's overwhelmingly loving toward his son. It's actually emotional. I'm not going to cry. I'm probably going to cry.
Don't cry.
But it's a really beautiful story because what he really is looking for is he's reaching out because he wants to find a way to say it's okay. And you two can be yourselves in this home. And who knows how long we're going to be here. So let's find a way to be here together and be okay with it because I don't care. And I love you no matter who you are or what you are or what you know, what society says you need to be. It doesn't matter to me. You're my son. So he goes, I'm going to scroll down to the actual question and I'm going to read it and then we can talk about it. So what I want advice on is this. How do I let my son and his boyfriend know? Because there is confirmation throughout the story that he did, you know, see them in his bedroom. The friend was supposed to be in the guest room, son in his own room, woke up, went for an early run. They were together cuddling and in bed together sleeping. So that was confirmation enough for him. Not necessarily confirmation, but confirmation enough for me as well, I think. So he wants advice on this. How do I let my son and his boyfriend know that I'm okay with them being a couple and they don't need to feel like they have to sneak around in my house? I want them to be comfortable here. I want them to know I support them no matter what. is this a good idea or is this a bad idea? Am I better off leaving it alone and waiting until they tell me themselves if they ever do? I obviously don't want to force either of them out of the closet, but at the same time, I hate feeling as if they feel they're being forced into the closet in my house. What's the best course of action here?
Well, here's my take on it. Obviously, you're super cool with it. You're okay with it and you are encouraging and you want to support your son. So be honest. Tell him, hey, I noticed you guys were hanging around in ways that, you know, regular friends don't hang around. Is there something going on between you? And if it is, tell me, it's okay. You guys are here. I want you to feel comfortable. Be honest. Be open. Right? Because that's the thing that a lot of people don't understand. So we were talking about coming out not too long ago on the show, and we talk about the fear, the anxiety, the stress that someone goes through with the fear of having to tell their parents and say, Mom, Dad, I'm gay. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine if my mother turned around and said, and by the way, I noticed you were doing this and I'm totally okay with it. How that would have sort of like it would have been an instant, let me take these bricks off my shoulders. She knows. Now all I have to do is just confirm it.
I think there's an added element here, though. I think there's a little bit of a broken foundation from his childhood with, mm-hmm. you know, his mother leaving, his father having a heroin issue. Everything did work out and they're fine. I mean, the child wanted to come home and instead of staying in his apartment, be at home with his father, mm-hmm. And bring his friend or partner to the house. But I think what I would do if I were in this situation, because it is a very fragile subject, mm-hmm. And he could be wrong, right? He could be wrong.
He could.
But he's probably not. What I would do is I would find something like a movie like The Thing About Harry, mm-hmm. or something with a gay theme throughout it. That's actually a good movie. And put it on when they're not in the room, or, you know, like just do something that's a little out of the norm and create a space for them to kind right. of be in and walk into. Right. So if you put on a movie or even invite them, be like, hey guys, I saw this movie. It was kind of interesting. I want to watch it. And I mean, it doesn't have to be like The Thing About Harry, because that's clearly a gay movie,
yeah.
but like with a gay theme in it, which allows you the space to actually kind of sort of open a conversation, whether it's like there's a gay couple in a movie that kiss and you just say, oh, you know what, that's so great, you know, something that just allows for that conversation to start.
See, I'm a shocker, so I would put on something like The Birdcage or Tu Wong Fu, but you know, another thing that he could do is do what other people are doing, go on social media, create a very emotional, you know, post, make it go viral, and then just put your picture on it, and then your son is going to be like, read it and be like, oh,
way to out me to everybody, Dad.
Yeah, thanks, Dad. I mean, but in the end, like I said, one of the most important things that I think that we lack is that sense of trust. And if you trust the fact that you are okay with that and you want to have that conversation, have the conversation. Don't wait, because you could be waiting years. Your son could be so scared of the fact that he wants to come out to you that you could be waiting decades. I've seen people go throughout their entire early years. I've seen people in their 50s and 60s come out after their parents die. Mm-hmm. I was part of that era. I was part of that whole mentality in where you would wait until literally your parents died before you could be you. And if you can take that burden away from your child, if you can look at your child in the eyes and say, I know, and I love you, and I support it, come in, let's have a couple of beers, drinks, whatever, pop some movies. You have no idea a weight that you lift from someone who's so, at sometimes so terrified to tell you, hey, Dad, I'm gay, or this is my lover, or this is my friend, or my boyfriend. It literally would make it not only easier for you, because obviously you're struggling with it, you want to, but you don't want to push him, but then it could also make it easier for him. I mean, I wish I had a dad like that, honestly.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think there are plenty of ways to approach it. I think being very upfront and open about it is good, but you know, I just, the only thing that worries me is like, what if they're not ready?
Hang a pride flag in front of your house.
Yeah, I mean, I think that if you're nervous about it, but you want to address it, yep. I think that's okay, especially right now when we have to live at home with one another. Right. I think, you know, addressing it head on can work. Mm-hmm. I also think that addressing it by creating a safe space for a dialogue is another way that it can work, because if you start that dialogue, then you can address it head on.
That's right.
So I think we're both right. I think that might be the steps that he wants to take to make it happen. I mean, there are other things too. I mean, just like order a face mask for Mama Kim and be like, yeah, I'm wearing a rainbow face mask. What of it?
Yeah. Or even a rainbow keychain, you know, go to Pocket Pride Plus and do all that good stuff.
Or like read an article on pride.com and they can walk in the room and be like, oh, I'm just reading this. This seemed interesting.
Yeah, I mean, you can nonchalantly go about it, I think, you know, but either
way,
what's
it about, Dad? Yeah. Oh, it's actually about a question that I posted. It went viral.
All right. Well, listen, we do have two amazing guests joining us right after the break. So we are going to, of course, leave you with some music. And when we come back, we have our two amazing guests joining us to discuss the new book that's coming out on April 28th. It's called The Gay Agenda. I'm super stoked and excited. Here's some music. We will be right back.
Tomorrow's hopes are in my eyes. Paints horizons in the sky that's meant for me, meant for me. Ready now to face the day. Done with fears of yesterday. Waited long enough to say I'm on the way, I'm on the way. I believe.
Right, welcome back from the break, ladies and gentlemen. That was Believe by Going Deeper featuring Davis Mallory. He is a previous guest of ours. We had him on the show, I'd probably say about 6 weeks ago. The man makes amazing music, and I'm waiting on Trish to come back. And Oh, there he is. He dropped
Sorry,
off.
Sorry, I got kicked off.
That's okay. Welcome back, darling. So, guys, we have two very amazing guests joining us today. They are the authors of this book that I'm holding in my hand that is going to be releasing on April 28th. We're super excited. It's The Gay Agenda. They are amazing, by the way. I have to tell you that this book is full of amazing illustrations. It also has... God, so many amazing fun facts that covers more than 100 plus years of LGBTQ plus history. I would like to welcome both of these ladies to the show. We've got Ashley, or I would say Ash and Chess. Welcome, ladies. Thank you for joining us.
Hi.
So before we get started, why don't you tell us who is who so that we can all know who we're talking to, and then we can go ahead and start the interview.
Cool. Well, I'm Ash. My pronouns are she, her, and I am one half of Ash and Chess.
Okay.
And I'm Chess. I actually identify as a trans man.
Okay.
And my pronouns are he, him.
Well, that's
and my other half.
Yay.
Well, that's great to know. So that way we won't have any mix-ups or anything. So that's awesome. So I'm holding this book in my hand. It is incredible. I love the illustrations on it. But before we get started, I wanted to let you know, I know that there's little things on here that tells who we are. I'm Tom, and I'll let my co-host introduce himself and do that.
I'm Nick or Trish, but I am he, him, his.
Cool.
And my pronouns are he, him. And so this book, the illustrations on this book are amazing. So let me start by asking... Who's the illustrator?
Ah.
Trick question.
Okay, yeah, trick question.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Ash has like an amazing art background, mm-hmm. and I don't have an art background, but she did teach me a lot of art, obviously, before the book. And then we tried to split the illustrations like almost 50-50. I mean, I would say the ratio is probably skewed a little bit more towards Ash because she. It's just like so fast at designing and so genius at it. So yeah, it's true. But basically we both did it, which is cool.
Yeah. It was really fun.
It was hard.
It was like a big collaboration.
Yeah.
So before this all happened, we got the book and I had the chance to skim through it. But since then, I haven't been to the studio. So I saw some of the illustration and it's amazing. And I read some of the stuff. But like, I'm so sad that I haven't been able to I usually have a book in my hand when I do an interview. This is the weirdest thing for me.
Yeah, I know.
This has been an adjustment for us, right? Typically, we're all in the studio where I am today, and we're all gathered around this amazing, huge desk that we have, but we can't do that. And so this has certainly been an adjustment. We're using this program called StreamYard that has allowed us to actually interview our guests this way, and it's been certainly a challenge for us,
yeah.
to say the least. But I wanted to ask, so you both also have a stationery company. That's also called Ash plus Chess. And you guys have made a lot of stationary products as well. Can you talk a little bit about that?
So I have to start from the very beginning.
Please do.
So we actually were dating and we've been dating for like 4 or 5 years now. And we met on an app. And
was it the Her app?
Yeah, it was her. So we met and then I was kind of like in between jobs when we first met. And I was like working as a designer in New York. And we went to a trade show together and I showed Chess what I really wanted to do. Which was start a stationery company. And he was like, you can't make money off of cards.
Yeah, I was like, what are you talking about? Like, I've never heard of a stationery company besides Hallmark.
I was like, I found it in college. I found the stationery industry in college. And it was really cool. And it was a great way to, like, have little, like, pieces of artwork that, like, were affordable for people, like, to buy and for us to make. I showed Chess around a trade show and then we both were like really pumped about it. And then at some point, I like quit my job / got fired.
Got fired.
I got it happens. Fired. It happens.
And then I'm waiting for it, so don't worry.
But it was at like that weird time where I was like, I'm gonna start, like, we're gonna start this company and like make it work anyway. And yeah. So that's kind of how I got into it.
So yeah. you're doing a lot of stationary illustrations and selling postcards and stuff. Was a lot of it LGBTQ based?
Not like at first, no. Like our first line only had like 6 cards in it anyways, and we tried to make them just like super relatable for any person to buy. And then what was our first gay card? Was that Gay Way?
Yeah, yeah.
So our first gay card said "I love you in a gay way," and like that one and that one, like, we thought we loved it, and then
I love it.
Thanks. It's a bestseller.
Yeah, it's like, but the number one.
Like before we even came up with that one, we said something in like our bio when we were going to the stationery show about like being a queer power couple, and everyone was like, "Oh, you can't say that. People aren't going to want to buy your stuff then. Like that's limiting your audience."
Yeah.
And we were just like, "No, we don't want to sell to people that wouldn't buy it from us because that's what we say about ourselves."
Yeah.
And so then we like kind of we did Gay Way and it sold super well, and then we expanded into other cards. Like I think we don't have like exclusively LGBTQ cards, but we have like a line of that, and then we have a line of just like other cards that are nicely designed and funny and relatable too.
Now the reason why I was asking that question is I wanted to know if any of your artwork from your projects there made it into this awesome book. Because if it did, or I tell you right now, I'm going to your website and I'm going to have to buy cards and mail out to everyone, because the stuff in this book is pretty cool, pretty intense, colorful, energetic. I am super pumped that I have this in my hands right now.
Oh, yay. Thanks.
Yeah, I would say, I'm trying to think if any motifs like slipped their way in there, but I don't think that they did. But the vibe is the same in our cards too, like colorful, bright, exciting.
Yeah.
Like similar style.
This is just like an extension of our greeting cards, but like extra gay.
Yeah.
It's super gay. I love it. It's super absolutely right up our alley. We were like, we got to get these people on the show. And Trisha's back. She keeps jumping off, but you know what? We love her.
Get it tomorrow. I can't handle this shit anymore. What the fuck? This is going to happen all day.
So why don't we jump right into the book? So why don't you tell us a little bit about the book? Obviously, I've been raving about it, but tell us in your own words what the book is, why it is so important to you, and what should our readers or people that are going to buy and read this book look forward to?
You want me to answer? You start.
Okay.
So what the book is, well, it's called The Gay Agenda, and then it has a subtitle, A Modern Queer History and Handbook. Mm-hmm. And it's basically that. It's kind of like it starts off as a history, I wouldn't say lesson like at all, but it just goes through the decades and talks about notable events and people and all of that. And then there's a handbook at the end too that talks about just like other queer things that are important.
Coming out,
transitioning, gender identity, things like that.
There's like a dictionary with dictionary, like a lot of terms.
I saw that.
Yeah, flags and things that like people just like might be curious about and might have wanted to know about.
Yeah.
So I actually went ahead. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but you were mentioning the dictionary. There's literally an entire section in the book here that I'm holding that tells you what lesbian is, what gay is. It tells you bisexual, transgender, queer, questioning, intersexual. So it's really helpful.
You know what's interesting? So I work at a nonprofit regional theater currently. But what's interesting is right now we are in this place where we're, you know, obviously we're pushing, you know, inclusivity, equality, and our board, they just don't understand. They don't understand what people are talking about all the time. Not all of them, but most of them. And there's no educational book that they can actually take and like look at and be like, oh, that's what this means. Yeah. This is something that can be used for something like that. Is there any intention behind that?
Look at this.
Yeah.
Pride flags of all shapes and sizes. This is great. It's amazing.
Yeah.
So it's also full of fun facts. So I
Wait, hold on. Hold on. I want to go back to what So is there any intention for actually using this as an educational platform for people?
Yeah. I mean, I think that it would be awesome in that way. Like, I know that there's a lot of topics that just people are like uncomfortable asking about, because it's like asking someone something really personal about their life. Like when someone tells you that they're trans and you've never met someone like that, you're like, oh crap, I don't know what that means.
Right.
Like, this isn't obviously a comprehensive like encyclopedia of answering all those questions, but it gives that person kind of like just like a starting point of like, oh, now I've heard of this and I've heard of other terms that people might use for that or other ways that people might describe themselves. So now I have, like, I know what to Google next, or I know like what to look up next, or, you know, I'll just be able to talk to them in a better way. And it just hopefully would stick out to people in the queer community and not in the queer community too.
So I recently did a show at the theater before we obviously closed. It was called I Am My Own Wife. I don't know if you know the show. Mm-hmm. But basically it's about a, we can't say transgender because that term wasn't really around during World War II, but mm-hmm. it's about, Charlotte Van Dusselhoff, I believe I'm saying that right. Who lived her life as a woman, to evade the Nazis, and how she went about protecting the Jewish community through that time. And in that, we had to bring on a trans, what's the word I'm looking for? Consultant, pretty much, to help not only our staff, but our board understand how to actually have these conversations. And I think that like books like this and like conversations like this are really important, because people just don't get it. And these books, even for kids, honestly, me and Tom were having a conversation about this earlier, even in like schools, like kids don't have the history, they don't have the knowledge, they don't have the definitions. And I think this book could actually provide a fun and pretty enticing platform for them. It's not just going to be like, I'm reading a history book. I'm reading a fun and exciting book right now.
Right.
It's pretty fun.
We wanted it to be fun.
Yeah, that's what we were going for.
You succeeded. But what I wanted to say earlier was that there's a lot of fun facts in here, including one that I found to be endearing and fun. It's the transgender symbol, for example. According to what you have here, the symbol that is used to represent the transgender people was designed in 1993 by a trans woman named Holly Boswell. The symbol is a combination of the female and male and her hermaphroditic gender symbol. Holly was a trans activist and spent most of her life learning and growing with a close community of trans and queer people. She was based in Asheville, North Carolina, and with Jessica Britton co-founded the city's Phoenix Transgender Support Group in 1986, a queer, trans, and gender nonconforming group that is still around today. That is awesome. And to think that, you know, in a state like, for example, North Carolina or someplace in the South, find organizations and centers that could help our trans kids and you know, children in the LGBT community that are going through so much. I mean, these are fun little things that in the book that I find that are also very informative. They give you a well-rounded perspective on what life was like then, and also the resources that were available that are still around today.
Yeah.
That's incredible. It's amazing. Yeah.
It is.
So this is a project that was conceived, obviously, by the pair of you. Mm-hmm. What part of this book or this project was the most fun to do?
I don't know, actually. I mean,
there were so many parts to it.
I know, I'm trying to think. I mean, I feel like actually towards the end, we got the book deal in November 2018.
Yeah.
And then
we started officially working on it in January 2019.
Yeah. And we had until June 2019 to turn it in, because we thought that that was like,
we didn't enough know how time long it took.
It was not. So I think that one of my favorite parts was like towards the very end, we had been like working on the illustrations. I was working at the time as a high school teacher too. So I was like trying to write the book, trying to work on the illustrations, working full time and working on the company too. So that part was like really tedious, but towards the end, like right when it was due, I quit my job in June And then we thought we were doing really well with the illustrations. And it turned out we still had like 50 to 70 illustrations left to do. And we were
That's like half the book. We're done.
So we went up to, my parents have a cabin up in the Adirondacks, which is like really far upstate New York. And we went up there and we brought like our printer with us and isolated. And
like worked for like 2 weeks.
Yeah, we were just like banging out the pages on it. And they're not in any order too. It's not like they were like the last pages of the book. They're just like random pages. But some of them turned out to be like my favorite ones that we worked on. And it also just was kind of fun, like the scramble to finish it, but also make something that was still cool and not rushed and not like, you know, we wanted to make sure it was still true to our vision and what we wanted for it. But it was fun because I've never had to design under like that type of pressure.
Oh my God.
I mean,
that's pretty amazing.
It is. You have so much in here. I mean, there's stuff about, for example, Audre Lorde. You have Freddie Mercury in here. You talk about the Stonewall riots, and you're laying everything out in a sense that, for example, you have a little bit on what happened pre-1900s, right? Yeah. And then you're literally going through the decades, and you start really focusing on, you know, like the 50s, 60s, and especially the 70s. Like I said, we were having an off-air conversation, Nick and I, about how this book, if I had children, I would give this book to children. I mean, it's that amazing, amazingly illustrated, fun enough for them to be engaged, but also learn some critical information about our history and some meaningful definitions of what it feels like to be in the LGBT community and having information to be able to identify people the way they truly want to be identified as. It's incredible.
What was the, so there, obviously, you know, we all are continually learning about our history all the time, and things are changing rapidly. What was it like to research this book, right? You had to, you didn't know all this information about the history of the LGBTQ plus community. How did you pick and choose? How did you research this book? What was that experience like for you guys?
It was really hard.
It was, like, yeah.
We felt like, I don't know, like being in control about like what content goes into this, like it was a little overwhelming because like we couldn't add everything. And
yeah, like there was just so much, like before we wrote the book, I would say I knew of like Harvey Milk and like I knew who Audre Lorde was. And obviously I knew like Ellen DeGeneres, like I knew like the basics. Yeah. But it was like, yeah, it was kind of stressful and difficult trying to like pick and choose, because when you're writing history, like you realize that you actually have the power over like whose story gets told. And so that was kind of like just a daunting task, because also like history, as we know, is super heteronormative, like what you learn in school, and it's also super whitewashed. So we were like, well, how do we include, like, how do we make sure that we include people that are important and then find people whose stories maybe we hadn't heard before and like deserve to have their story be heard. And then at the same time, know that we probably didn't include like half the people that should have been included in here, because maybe we've never heard of them, or maybe because like we just couldn't find enough information on them. So right. it was tough. I keep saying we need like a volume two already, because I just want to include more.
Yeah, you do. There's so much history. You do need a volume two. But, but my question though, another question that I have for you is like, when you were doing this research, because doing this show, and we've been doing this for now 3 years, I've learned so much for 4 years. Sorry. Oh my God, I can't keep track anymore.
We're going on year five soon.
God, I can't handle it. I've had moments doing the show where I've researched something and I'm like, oh my God. You know, it just hit me. And like, whether it was an emotional like feeling or just like, what the fuck? Like, for example, one of the biggest things for me, I didn't realize that during the AIDS crisis that gay women were the ones that were taking care of the gay men that were dying. Like, and that's never advertised. And that hit me so hard, because we've segregated our communities so intensely for so long that I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with all of us? We're one community, right? So that hit me really hard. And I'm wondering for you, what was one of those moments when you were doing this research?
Oh man, that's tough. I was actually going to say like the AIDS crisis as well, because just like I don't know, growing up, I feel like we always heard about, like, I knew that it was a crisis and I knew, like, that it affected gay men disproportionately and I knew all those things about it. But then writing about it, like, I wanted to write a timeline on it. And I remember I started writing it and then the timeline just, like, kept going and going and going before anybody did anything and before, like, the government actually took action. And it was, like, so shocking to write about and, like, so disheartening to write about because it's, like, well, I still see this now if there's, like, an issue that affects one marginalized community so much more than another, like nothing happens. And only the people in that community know about it in the moment until it becomes history. And like someone else is writing about it.
You're right.
So I was mean, like, that was crazy to write about. I was just like, when am I going to like get to a good part of this story? Like, it's just, it was staggering.
I don't think we had any government officials, at least in the high, at the executive level that like that acknowledged the impact of HIV and AIDS until the AIDS quilt was unveiled on our National Mall. And that happened in the 90s.
Yeah.
I mean, so, you know, I mean, you had the Reagan years that went completely, you know, they completely shunned the whole HIV epidemic when it came to the LGBT community. I think for me, one of the most impactful things to learn about that time period in our history was Heart Island.
Yeah.
And how many people were buried there with no names, just boxes. And those were people that family members refused to acknowledge or recognize or even go and claim. And so they were buried in a mass burial on this little island called Heart Island. And, when I read that and then when I saw it portrayed in FX Pose, when I saw that first episode of season 2, I had to stop and cry for like 20 minutes before I was able to get back into the show and continue watching that episode. Very powerful stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
So
what about you, Ash?
Yeah.
Did you have a moment like that as well?
Okay. Well, I do have to admit that Chess wrote most of the book.
But you read it.
I helped with a few parts, but one of the parts that I did help with was a little bit about the police raids. And I feel like that really blew my mind that like that happened and like that made, I don't know, it happens. It still probably happens in other countries maybe. But just like, I think like understanding that like, there wasn't like, how should I say this? Like, just like not having a safe space to be queer and like being, you know, like kind of maybe like targeted, like in your only safe space, which could have been like a bar or something. Like, it was just like really sad.
And heartbreaking. Really sad.
Yeah. It was just like, these people are just like, trying to have a good time and like be themselves. And that's what we're trying to do every day. And then like people have to go and ruin it.
I don't mean to like stir up like all this negative emotional energy, but the reality is as much as this book is fun and loving and important, it's powerful because you look at the LGBTQ history that's being taught in schools now, in some schools, and it's like a page or two.
Yeah.
And the reality is, what our community went through is far more than a page. You wrote a book and you're already talking about another book.
And we
need to continue to tell these stories, and that's what's so important. And we can't thank you enough for writing this book. It might look like it's like this fun, loving and, you know, fluffy book, but it's not. It's important. It tells a story and it has a lot of fun imagery, but like, the stories in that book need to be told, and that's what you guys are doing with this book, and I think it's beautiful.
Thank you.
You know, a lot of people, like you were mentioning, Ash, I'm sorry, you know, not having a safe space, right, to think when you can walk into a bar and you feel safe, but really you're not, and then the police raids, and you think about how 51 years ago, we had a raid that occurred at the Stonewall Inn. And 51 years later, we're, you know, well, 50 years later, we celebrated, you know, World Pride in New York City. to commemorate such a historic moment in our community. And today it was just confirmed that Pride, for the first time in over 50 years, won't be happening in New York City. That celebration might go on in a virtual way, but it's not going to be felt with the love and energy that we typically would see when you go into New York City for this amazing event. How do you feel about that?
I have chills that you said it, even. although the queers can't be there in person, we're all still there in spirit, right, which I think is an important thing to remember. I mean, I do have to say the energy that goes on, like, at any Pride event that I've ever been to, like, just, like, being surrounded by, like, your family.
Yeah.
Is just, like, it's such an experience.
Yeah, it's, like, the only time you ever get that.
I know. It's like you feel on top of the world, like, just being around all these people that, like, are just like you. And, I mean, it really blows that we can't be there physically, but it's not forgotten because of that. Like,
not at all. And I don't mean to imply that it most likely will be. It just goes to show you that, you know, the impact that
and the power of what it actually is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And to think that some young, you know, queer boy or a transgender man or woman coming into their own at this point wanted to go and experience, you know, our community. And for the first time in 50 plus years, we won't be able to do that in a setting in what we've been used to, you know, passing by the Stonewall Inn and saluting to those, you know, Marsha P. Johnson and all of these other amazing people that did amazing things to get us to where we are today. It's very eerie.
Yeah.
And there's also this other weird thing about Pride for me. It's like, I remember I've been to a couple prides now, obviously, because I'm getting old. Mm-hmm. But like the reality is it's no matter where you go, if you're with your partner and you're a queer person, you hold their hand, but there's always this weird like energy where you're looking over your shoulder. You're just making sure the space is safe. But when you're at Pride, you hold your partner's hand, you kiss your partner, you hold them like nothing matters. Like the world is like, you can be whoever you want to be and love whoever you want to love. And I think that is what's tearing me up the most. And I know that it wasn't in any way an attack on the LGBTQ+ community, but it's like this like heart-wrenching moment of like, that is the one time where we all just like love each other the way we should always love each other. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm finding hard with the whole thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, so back to the book. So before we wrap this up, so I always ask this one question of everybody. So for both of you, hopes and dreams, what are your hopes and dreams for this book? Like, what do you want it to do? How do you want it to impact the LGBTQ+ and beyond community?
I really hope that people pick up this book and I don't know, like learn about themselves in it and like come to get like, I don't know. I hope it invokes like self-discovery. And I also hope that it falls into the hands of people who don't know or like are kind of like almost unwilling to learn about the queer community, like parents of queer people. I don't know, like friends who, I don't know, but I want,
no, you're saying exactly. That makes sense. You want it from what I understand. It's like, you're saying basically you want people that wouldn't pick up the book that might need to pick up the book to pick it up and learn something that might change their point of view.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. And I also hope that it, falls into the hands of people who are feeling alone so they can read about this stuff and know that they're not alone. And that would be like the best thing ever. We were really happy to be able to make this book. And that was one of the biggest things. Like, we wanted the community to like have something that would like affirm their identities and like everything. I don't know.
Yeah, you stole my answer.
Sorry.
It's fine. Yeah, basically just something where like everybody can feel like they were seen in some sort of way and represented in some sort of way.
That's amazing. Well, I have to tell you, the pair of you did an amazing job with mm-hmm. this book. You know, for our listeners, and obviously we'll post this on tonight's post as well with the link on how you can get the book. It's coming out April 28th. I want to take an opportunity to wish you both luck and success with this book because it is fantastic. I'm going to be ordering a copy and donating it to our local New Haven Pride Center here in Connecticut. Yeah. Because I think this is something that they should have in stock. I think any LGBT organization would serve well to get this book and give it to the people that visit the center and let them read it and let them scroll through it. It's just truly a masterpiece and very well done.
Thank you so much.
Welcome. Before we go, one more thing. Mm-hmm. Where can they find you, our listeners? Where can they find you and where can they find your book?
Okay, so you can find us, we have a website, ashandchess.com, and you can learn all about our lives on our Instagram, which is just Ash and Chess. We go pretty wild on there with the stories.
Yeah.
And then the book, we have been directing people to IndieBound, which is a website that allows you to search through your zip code to see which local bookstores are selling the gay agenda.
Mm-hmm. It's available on like Amazon and everything as well, but it's just like, since so many stores are now kind of like closed down and really hit hard by the coronavirus.
Yeah, we're just trying to like get people to like support local and stuff rather than like shopping big. I mean, you can still order it on like Barnes & Noble and stuff, but no, it's whatever you want to do.
Well, no, I mean, if IndieBound is an option, we'll put it on our post and hope that you're right. I mean, given the circumstances that we find ourselves in, I think that, you know, once we're able to get a copy of the book, it would be critical for us to support our local businesses. If they have it, go there and get it.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, before you go, Strange Ways in New Haven is this amazing do you know it?
We sell our stuff there.
Okay, that's amazing. Great. Then I don't even need to say anything else.
That's awesome. Well, I want to take an opportunity to, again, thank you both for joining us today and talking about this amazing publication. We're super excited. Can't wait for it to come out. And we wish you both a lot of luck and success with the book. And if there's a number two coming out, we want to know about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thank you. This was really fun.
You're welcome.
Thank you for joining. Well, bye, guys.
Okay.
Bye. Never use this one. Yeah. You don't know what to do.
Yeah, I'm still figuring it out. You're fine.
Well, ladies and gents, of course, that was Ash and Chess, and they're both amazing, awesome, beautiful people who have created a masterpiece of work. And I think, like I said, every parent, every person should read this. It's truly awesome. The New Haven Pride Center is getting a copy. I think so. I'll buy it and do it.
That was an amazing conversation. You know, it's really weird. And like I said, when we were talking to them, like normally I get a chance to actually peruse and or read a decent amount of a book, but I had not had that chance with this book. I did get to skim it and see a decent amount of the photos, but of course I left it in studio. So I have not been able to dive deeper, but Tom got the chance to dive deeper in the book.
I did.
But that was such a good conversation. And I was like, I'm not sure this is going to be good for me today because I don't know. I haven't had a chance to really get into the book. Well, but I thought that was great.
Here's another thing that I know that I picked up on pretty quickly. I'm trying to find the page. And I said, so what they did was is they took, for example, like here's the 2000s, right? And so they give you a critical or key things that happened in the 2000s that sort of kind of give you an idea of what to expect. Like, for example, in the 2000s, we got Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, the original. Oh my God. You got Tegan and Sarah, the first legal same-sex marriages. You got the L Word. There was Proposition 8. There was Allison Bechtel, and then Jazz Jennings, RuPaul's Drag Race, right? And so it just gives you an idea of, you know, how impactful and how awesome it is to read in retrospect what has happened over these decades.
Yeah, and I think to reiterate what you were saying too is I really think that this book, because it's not just text heavy, it's not like you're going to sit down and read a book that makes you fall asleep. You're going to see imagery. You're going to see this. Not only does it depict the image of the Matthew Shepard, don't bring that up right now, but it depicts you know our history, but it depicts via photos and illustration and art the beauty that is within our community as well.
That's right. It's just unbelievable. I can't tell you that this is one of the most fun. It's the most fun I've ever had going through a book. I'm what I call a micro napper. So I can read a chapter or three paragraphs and I have to take a nap because I get sleepy. There's like no sleeping
during this. 2 to 5 minutes, though.
Yeah, seriously. So there's no sleeping through this. I mean, it's fun and it's engaging. And there's a lot of beautiful information on here. Like I said, this would be an adequate book to throw in a school library and let kids access it because truly it does have a lot of amazing information into it. So, Miss Trish.
Can I bring up a text message that I got during that interview that made me laugh during an important part that was not a laughable moment?
Okay.
So this comes from, take a guess.
Mama Cam?
No.
Chris?
No.
Steve?
Yes.
Sorry.
All right. So the text I get is, if we were together, would you iron my clothes for me?
God, no.
My response was, would I have a choice? Followed by him, maybe we should draw up a contract. There are some services I would require. And I said, I will not sign a prenup. And then he goes, no, like your responsibility for laundry and ironing, sex once a month, lights must be off, etc. My response to that, once a month? What?
What's wrong with him?
I have no idea. I have no idea. I think he's just lonely.
Welcome to the quarantine blues.
Oh God, that's why he's texting me so much.
Yeah, it's the quarantine blues. It's happening. Sad. I mean,
it's hurtful.
This is week 5, or it's going to be almost week 6 for me.
This is week 6 for me because I was home that 1 week.
So it's 5 weeks for me. You know what? I lost track of time. It's like, who the hell knows anymore where we're sitting or standing at? But you know what?
We're going to be recording. It's going to be a Tuesday. We don't know. It's fine.
Seriously. So it looks like it's just the you and I show tonight. Unfortunately, I forgot to mention this earlier on. Elsie had an engagement that couldn't allow her to get on tonight with us. She had to go into the city. Well, not into the city. She went into... Well, yeah, it's in the city. It's the Bronx. It's part of New York City. She had to go pick up mom and bring her over. So she couldn't make it. And Chris tried. Boy, that boy. He tried.
He keeps trying.
Yeah, but you know. It is what it is. So it's the Trish and Tom show today. And so I'm going to let Trish take over because he's got the Mama Kim's Minute.
All right, everybody. So it's that time again. It's Mama Kim's Minute, everybody.
Yes, please.
So number one, Virginia is the first state in the South to make it illegal to discriminate against LGBTQ+ people. Number two, Trump tells pastor to forget coronavirus and pray for his reelection instead. Fuck off. Number three, there is always a rainbow after a rain. Challenged by coronavirus, LGBTQ communities worldwide plan digital pride celebrations. Number four, Anthony Fauci? I'm going to say it wrong.
You said it right.
Oh, damn it. Yes. Anthony Fauci gives tactic okay to hookups during the pandemic.
Oh, my God.
I would not read that article. Don't do it.
I'm going to.
What the fuck? But thanks, Mama Kim, for sending that.
Thank you.
Don't send it to your son.
Yeah, I think Hans put something on his website, not his website, on his Facebook page about some of the guidelines of having sex that they posted in Sweden somewhere. I thought it was pretty interesting, but yeah. So,
speaking of Hans, really quickly,
yeah,
he did release a new book this weekend. Well, not he didn't release a new book, audiobook this weekend. Start listening to it, and it's really good. And I'm sure everybody's going to like it, so I'm going to tell everybody. So Jonathan's Hope is released on audiobooks, and you should check it out. If you don't like audiobooks, you can order it online.
That's right. It's one of his earlier novels, but he just re-released it in the audiobook version, right?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, okay, awesome. So let's jump right in. We've got our Gay Talk term of cross of course, brought to you by
GayRealEstate.com.
Time so delay. Our gay talk term for this episode is move in. It is to buy a pair of secondhand jeans. And there they were in Goodwill. The jeans I have always died for. So I moved in.
That's amazing.
I love it.
All right.
So that was our gay talk term.
Excuse me. All right, everybody. So on this day in gay history, of course, brought to you by GayRealEstate.com. Okay, we did it, sort of. The Mattachine Society members staged a sip-in. When? April 20th, 1966. Where? USA. Dick Leachy, president of the New York Mattachine Society, and two other members hold a sip-in at the Julius Bar in Greenwich Village. This led to a court action that overturned the New York State Liquor Authority's provisions declaring it illegal for homosexuals to congregate and be served alcohol in bars.
Mm-hmm. And you were speaking about it. That's also in this book. So I'm telling you, there's so much amazing stuff in this book. Get it, people. Comes out April 20th. All right. So here's an announcement. So my friend Patrick Dunn, or I should say our friend Patrick Dunn over at the New Haven Pride Center has asked us to let you know that if you are living in the state of Connecticut, they are conducting a COVID-19 LGBTQ plus community survey in partnership with the Hartford Gay and Lesbian Health Collective, True Colors, and OutCT. If you have a moment, it takes about 5 or 10 minutes to complete. Just head on over to tonight's post or on our Facebook page, our Gay Talk Facebook page, and click on the link and fill out the survey. Let them know what it is, how you're doing, how you think they're doing, and anything that you may need from our community leaders, people that are out there trying to help us out. It is important to note that this is only available and open to Connecticut residents only, because these organizations do support the Connecticut area. But if you have, your local LGBTQ centers in your area doing any type of survey that's similar to this, I would encourage that you go and fill it out, because, again, it is important for them to know how the community is doing and what they can do to better serve the community. So make sure you guys check that out if you're in Connecticut. Okay. I posted that back up on the video so that you can see it. I want to thank you all for joining us. If you love the show, make sure that you go subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcasting service. By doing so, you get the latest and greatest of our show delivered right to your web browser or your favorite device as soon as our episodes are published. You can also support us on Patreon. That allows you, our listeners, to support the show with a monetary donation. Those donations are collected monthly and can be in any denomination of a dollar or more. Chris is not here.
He's not here. All right. So next week, we welcome David Ellison, author of Santander Rambling on Borrowed Time. We're super excited about it. He is an educator who talks a little bit about the history of his life in education and also some of the struggles that he's had being a gay educator.
That's awesome.
Anyway. And thank you to our guests, Ash and Chess. Their book, The Gay Agenda, will be available for purchase on April 28th, 2020, and will be available on Amazon as well as other local bookstores, which we will post on our post tonight.
And I'm going to look at that IndieBound thing. I definitely want to know.
I was looking for a pen to write it down so I could say it. So thank you for writing it down.
I couldn't
find my pen. All right, everybody. So don't forget. Get your discount for Future Method today. Each time you clean out with water or enemas, delicate tissues are harmed and cells are damaged, increasing chances of injury and or STDs. The first of its kind, doctor-developed formula that gently cleanses before you play without hurting your bum. And now you can use code GAYTALK20 for 20% off a valid purchase for one purchase or on a subscription per person.
You tried.
Hey, dude, I did good until the end. Anyway, should we put a dental dam on this?
Yes, we should.
All
actually,
right.
Today could be a dental dam and a rubber. Why not do both?
Let's wrap it up.
Let's wrap it up. So, all right. Do you want to go?
Okay. I got it. All right. So our show is available on our website, gaytalk20.com, under show and episodes. It's also available as a free download on iTunes, Google Play Music, and Stitcher Radio. Nick announces again. You can find us on social media, Facebook, Gay Talk 2.0, Instagram, Gay Talk 2.0, Twitter at Gay Talk 20. You can email us at gaytalk2.0 at gmail.com. Tom, take it away.
And if you need to reach out to us, you can just head on over to our website, click on the Contact Us tab located at the top of your web browser. There you can leave comments, you can suggest topics, or you can submit a question for the cast or an individual host. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail with your question, and we can answer those for you if you want on the show. That phone number is 334-429-8255 or 334-GAY-TALK. I should have said that first, but there goes that. Don't forget... Don't forget that we do stream live every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you can access that audio live stream by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. I want to say thank you. With that, ladies and gents, that is our show. Thank you, and y'all have a good night. Bye!
Bye!
Oh, that wasn't the song.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Gay Talk 2.0. Tune in next time for more dish.